No time like the present indeed. I was playing into it that time. That wasn't my natural podcasting voice, in case you couldn't tell.
That was recording?
Yeah. That was a that was an affected podcasting voice. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts?
This is your party, man.
Hey, man.
Let's just get it out of the way up front.
Oh?
I feel like this is going to be a bad episode.
No. No. We just finished the emotionally exhausting sports movie bracket. We are preparing next week for the return of an emotionally exhausting bracket. This one's going to be all sports, which, let's be honest, the all sports episodes, are those the worst ones?
It's not the sports. It's that it's more that I'm looking right now at the document, and the first segment block just has more of a take than really a segment. And then no text underneath.
We tend to get off on tangents and stuff like that. I figure like we'll be able to fill the minutes.
Honey, apologies to my mom for this joke, but I get off on tangents.
As soon as it came out of my mouth, I regretted it.
Now I can't say that. You come out of your mouth.
And she said it anyway.
Oh, it was a family start the show.
You gonna start?
Hey, welcome. To High Global Ceiling Sports Podcast you're listening to now, Griffin.
Yeah.
If you could have $4.5 million just for listening to a guy tell you who he thinks is going to win a game of sports.
Yes. Otani Watch. I didn't think we'd be coming back to Otani Watch, our popular segment for 10 years. I thought we were done with Otani Watch, but it's back, and not in a good way. Chris.
Yes, do you need me to fill in the news information?
Shohei Otani. Who's to say? I'm not going to say. I don't want to make slanderous accusations.
Yeah, you should speculate wildly.
If you're not familiar with the story, Shohei Otani's best friend, or one of his best friends, we don't know how
best
he...
Best friend?
They are very, very close. They've been...
They're close. I don't know if he's his best friend.
Well, like I was going to say, we don't know how Shohei Otani ranks his friends. If you got
his
him
work
in
husband.
Person, one-on-one, and you were like, Shohei, rank all your friends. I feel like Shohei's a big, my wife is my best friend.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. Don't you think?
Now
well,
we
don't
know
a lot about
his wife's
Shohei.
Identity.
Yeah. He's notoriously private, but his wife, professional basketball player, love that.
So you think that he is not only mourning the loss of a bunch of money, he's also mourning the loss of his best friend?
Well, how much do you think this is actually a case of his best friend wronging him? Or is this a case of them doing right by each other? Anyway. If you're not familiar...
Is that what you want to talk about?
The dynamics of their friendship, yes. Shohei Ohtani's translator for his entire Major League career, ever since he first joined the Los Angeles Angels in, like, what was it, 2016, 2017?
Something like that.
One of his very good friends, Ipe Mizuhara, was fired by the Los Angeles Dodgers without warning this week when it was revealed that he had played some sort of role in illegally gambling on sports with a California bookie.
I think I know exactly the role he played.
Well, do you? Initially, and the big deal is that Shohei Ohtani's name was on some of the wire transfers that were used to pay his... $4.5 million.
Don't look at any information. I just want you to tell me what.
I think I have this pretty well down. So,
okay. I believe you.
Lawmakers, not lawmakers, that's the government, law enforcement, is investigating this Southern California bookie. They find payments from bank accounts in Shohei Ohtani's name and begin to investigate. Ipe Mizuhara says that he has a gambling addiction. He racked up a debt to this bookie of $4.5 million, and he says that Shohei Ohtani helped him out and paid off some of his debt, which is, of course, a federal crime to wire money to a bookie. And yeah, so that was what he said in his first interview with ESPN. And then, about a day later, Shohei Ohtani's lawyers, or his people, whoever is working in Ohtani land, they come out, they say, and I think Ipe himself says, that's actually not true. That was a lie. I have changed my story, and now the story is that Ipe stole that money from Shohei, and he never knew anything about it. He's been completely duped by his close friend and the man who was his voice for several years.
Powerful.
And now, you know, speculation has run rampant. If initially they had just come out and said the money was stolen, I don't think anyone would have really looked twice. But the changing stories is what really makes this. It's fascinating and, like, scary. Like, what is really going on here?
It would be, to me, also I just want to get this out off the top, for a guy named Ipe,
he was not paying.
It would be extreme. I mean, I don't know. This is, why are we even talking about this?
What do you mean? It's the biggest story in baseball.
It is, but it's like, well, for starters, everyone is afraid to say anything because they're afraid of getting sued.
Do you think Ohtani Land's going to come for us?
I don't think Ohtani Land's going to come for us. I think it would be a little irresponsible to
speculate
as to the intentions of, as you said, a notoriously private person who is a little bit inscrutable at times.
Yes. We should say that Ipe has remained consistent on the fact that he never, ever bet on baseball.
Right.
Which is
baseball.
Baseball. Basically, the story as we understand it right now is that Ipe has a gambling addiction, which is a very serious and sad thing that we should take seriously. And I think it's pretty unlikely, personally, that Shohei Ohtani had no knowledge of this. It seems like somewhere along the line he was probably a willing participant. I'm not really sure if I believe that Well, whether it was in the gambling
terms of covering these
or
debts,
the paying, yes. I don't think I really believe that he had $4.5 million stolen from him.
I'll say, I know what you mean, and I think I probably agree with you. If I had $4.5 million in gambling debts, I would not defer $95 million of my salary. I'd be like, I actually need all of that now. Can I, like, reverse defer it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. If Shohei Ohtani was in this, because some have speculated that Ipe was the go-between between Shohei Ohtani and Ohtani is really the one with the big gambling habits. But yes, that deferring $68 million a year does not seem like the actions of someone who has a massive gambling problem.
And also, like, why would Shohei Ohtani have gambling debts? I guess.
Yeah, why would he not just pay
the
debts?
But I mean, yeah, which sounds stupid now that I say it. But at any rate, I don't know.
Yeah, here's the, I think the thing that you're sort of bouncing around and what I'm going to say is, does this matter at all if Shohei Ohtani, like, here, what I'm trying to, for me, the only way that this is even important is if Shohei Ohtani was betting on baseball. If there's anything beyond that, whether Ipe was betting not on baseball or on baseball and Shohei was willingly covering his debts, I don't really care about that. I know that's technically a crime in California. That doesn't matter in my opinion of Shohei Ohtani. If Shohei Ohtani has a massive gambling problem and wasn't betting on baseball, I don't really care about that either. Like, sure, he's bad at gambling, okay, but, like, the only way that this possibly matters is if it comes out that Shohei Ohtani was actively gambling on baseball, in which case the precedence is that he would be banned for life.
Yeah, well, certainly, yes. But I also think that if he were gambling on something else, I mean, I don't know the exact rules in MLB, but I mean, what we have seen in multiple different leagues at this point is that he would probably be suspended for a season or at least half of a season. Like, we've had, you know, Calvin Ridley and then Shane Pinto also recently, who were both not betting on their own sport, but were doing gambling, and I guess...
And, like, using team facilities or something like that? I
was
gonna say,
there was that thing about the team, but wasn't that the Lions? That wasn't Calvin Ridley?
Yeah.
At any rate, all this to say... nothing. But, I mean, it's just, it's a very strange situation. Obviously, I see what you're saying, and I basically agree with you. I think that probably if Shohei Ohtani was racking up $4.5 million in gambling, that's, I do still probably care about that. From a moral perspective, I mean, I don't care about any of it from a moral perspective. Like, you think Shohei Ohtani is throwing games? Like,
yeah. Yeah, what if this is not as good as he can be? What if he's diving?
He's been sandbagging the whole time. But I will say also is that, like, I think that this, maybe not this, but it does feel like we are sort of like very quickly cruising towards a reckoning with sports betting, is what I will say.
Yes.
I don't know how much you dabble, but I'm not a participant in that scene, not for any moral grounds, just not really my thing. But, and I don't know if you saw that recently there was this announcement that they're working to integrate live betting into NBA League Pass.
Yeah, so it can just pop up right on the screen that you're watching it on. You can track the odds live.
Yeah, and basically what I said then is like, this is the new tobacco, basically. That, like, it's unregulated right now. It's a bit of a Wild West. Like, money is pouring in the door, and so people are kind of, like, happy to take the money. But I think in, like, 5 years, 10 years, that they'll be like, whoa, this was actually a horrific idea, and we need to, like, severely scale it back. And you can already kind of see it. Like, there are many, many people that just don't like it straight up, and at the very least, don't like the way it has been integrated so heavily into broadcasts. That's really what I think.
Yeah.
Like, the problem is, because it used to be like, it swung so far the other way, because it used to be like people would get mad because I think it was like Al Michaels sometimes would be like, when there was like a spread situation at like the end of a game and there's a random touchdown or a field goal, he'd just sort of be like, oh, like, you know, sort of like vaguely allude to it that like, oh, that field goal probably like made some people pretty happy or something to that effect, and that you, that was like taboo that he would even do that. And now it's like, they're plus 375 to make this field goal. And it's so, you know, I hate to use the word incestuous, but I will.
Once again, I will not stop myself.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I think that it can only get worse, really. Like, we've only really seen the start of it.
Yeah, I mean, that is the big thing. And we should mention, are we against gambling? Like, if a gambling company wants to sponsor our podcast?
Well, we stan whatever our sponsor is. And if you are going to bet, of course we want you to do it through...
High... payouts, low buy-ins,
ceiling.
That I've decided to start our own sportsbook, by the way.
I was just sort of creating some silence so that it could be later filled in by our sponsor, but
okay.
I think you're right that we should.
Well, why rely
start
on
our
else?
Own sportsbook? Exactly. And I know a guy who loves betting through unlicensed sportsbooks.
We have one client and he pays us $4.5 million. In order for me to just download the FanDuel app and be like, okay.
Oh boy. Oh, have we done enough? I don't.
Sports makes me gambling illegal in California, of course.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, there's that too.
That's why they used a bookie, I presume, and why
right.
Ipe didn't just have a Betway account.
how many sports books can you name?
I'm leaving it. Oh, let's see. There's Betway. There's FanDuel.
Do you think that Ipe is a Tony Bet guy?
Tony Bet. There's Bet Rivers. There's Bet365. There's Sports Interaction. I'm just trying to think of all the commercials I watch on any sports broadcast.
Exactly. Americans don't know anything about hockey, and will self-censor there.
Those stupid. Not listen. If you want to sponsor us, Sports Interaction sponsors a lot of Canadian sports podcasts. So
absolutely, we love. We will delete this episode in a heartbeat
if Sports Interaction reaches out to us. But my whole thing is like, they say their whole campaign with that is Americans don't know about hockey, so bet with us, the Canadian sports book.
Yes, I think
because we know hockey. But if I'm a Canadian and I know hockey, wouldn't I want to bet with someone who doesn't know hockey so that I can take advantage of them? Why would I want to bet with the people? Why would I want to bet against the people who are super knowledgeable about what I'm betting on?
That's very
true. I want to take them for a ride.
And also, like, I do also, another thing I find a little bit, like, not quite gross, but, like, certainly silly, is the ones that are like, bet with the like provincially sponsored
betting. Proline?
Yes. Because all of your losses will go back to the community. So like there's like a charitable.
Yeah, it's like basically, sure, the house always wins, but sometimes your house wins can go towards housing.
Yeah, your house, the house is your house.
Really, it's like you don't lose any money at all.
Yeah. Just like the water cycle.
What do you think the provincial income every year is from Proline? How many roads is that paying for?
How much does a let's just total blue sky it? How much does a road cost?
We're talking
and that's the episode.
An average Ontario road.
Yeah, let's say
to create a new one or to upkeep an existing road.
Good question. Let's say that there's a new housing development.
Okay.
And it's, how long are things? maybe it's 300, how do they measure roads? Probably in square feet, right?
Square, I guess, yeah, if you're laying down asphalt.
Laying pipe. So let's say the road is, what, 15 feet wide? Is that how wide roads? I'm so bad at visual things. So I love that this is happening.
Like, picture me lying down in a road. I feel like it's more than 15
feet. Honey, every night.
Screw you. I feel like it's three me's. So let's go 20 feet.
Okay, 20 feet wide. Let's say it's... I was about to say meters, but then we'd have to convert it.
Oh, God.
How many feet long is our road?
For a
let's say 500 feet.
Okay.
So 500 times 200.
No, 500 times 20.
Right. So that's
10,000. Yeah.
Okay, so 10,000 square feet of road. How much is that going to run us? And I have my answer.
Going to say $75,000.
Really?
That's my guess.
That's quite a bit. I was going to say $160,000.
Okay.
When you factor in parts and labor, you know?
That's like true. I forgot about the labor.
Asphalt alone. It's probably more than that.
I don't really believe paying for labor.
I'm now Googling, and just be really careful about how much you're saying that. How much does a road cost? I wrote, how much does a road cost? Generally speaking, you can expect to pay between $1.25 and $15 per square foot.
Massive range.
Which means the standard 12-foot wide private road, so a municipal road is probably wider.
Right.
Would cost between $750 and $9,000 for every 100 feet of road you need.
That range is so wide that it's practically useless. $750 to $9,000 per 100 feet.
Okay, here we go. this looks more promising. This is from Midwest Industrial Supply. They say for a 6-lane interstate highway. So again, okay. Not quite.
So
what
divide
we're
this
for,
by
but
six.
Divide it by two. Well, by three.
Yeah. Divide it by three. Ideally. You want a 2-lane road.
But it says for a 6-lane interstate highway, you're looking at $7 million for a rural mile of road, and $11 million plus in an urban locale.
Okay, so we'll say $7 million.
Divided by three, divided by a bunch.
Oh, because we don't want a mile long.
Just guess, how many feet in a mile?
Isn't it like 5,200 and something?
All right, I'm looking it up.
You were dead wrong about this being a bad episode, by the way.
Griffin?
Yeah?
5,280 feet in a mile. You did an awesome
Let's
job.
Let's go. Okay, so what did we say we wanted? 200 feet? 200 feet?
Let's say 200.
Okay, so how do we...
So just quickly in your head, do 7 million divided by 3.
Did that.
Divided by... because we only want...
Yeah, what are we dividing by?
So it's 5280 divided by x equals 200. So we want 200x equals 5280. So just solve for x there and then add and then divide the... 7 million divided by three
so
by that.
200x. What you solve the algebra and I'll finish the calculation.
All right, folks. 200x equals 5280. That means that we want to divide 5280 by 200 to isolate for x. That gives us, folks, 26.4. X equals 26.4.
Okay, so I've divided 7 million by three, and now I'm dividing that number by 26.4.
That's correct.
Okay. Chris, our total cost for our road, and this is, of course, 100% accurate, is $88,383 okay. and 84 cents.
I think we were right. I think we were in the right ballpark.
I was off by less than... Guess? Mine was 75,000. I was off by less than 10,000.
Okay, you did a terrific job.
And why we are we talking about this?
I don't remember.
Oh, it was because... OLG winnings. All right, now we Google how much yes. does OLG make in a year.
I'll Google OLG revenues.
or I guess we want profit.
Because they have to report this.
Or is it just Proline? Yeah. It's just Proline. Proline profit. We yeah, this has got to be a public thing.
Okay, here's I'm now looking, Griffin, at OLG's 2022-23 annual report.
Yes,
it's
please.
A mere 100 pages long.
Is there a big sign that just says profit?
Should I read the land acknowledgement first? financial highlights. That sounds like what we're looking for. 300. I'm looking at a chart, and I'm seeing 4.5 billion. In what they've labeled as contributions to Ontario.
Okay.
But that includes... Okay, but net profit to the province is $2.5 billion.
Okay, so 88,383. Remember that number. $2.5 billion. My calculator only goes up to $250 million. Okay, there we go. I put it to landscape.
Your calculator only has 9 digits.
I put it to landscape orientation that added more. What was the number, Chris? 883. Chris, OLG, every year alone, can pay for over 29,803 roads.
And I only need one.
That's true. You famously do not go anywhere.
I just ride the streetcar, and
that's on one road.
It has its own right-of-way lane, so there's no road needed.
Yeah. All right, so basically... OLG is the best thing to ever happen to this province, is what I'm hearing.
What I'm hearing is that OLG is slacking, because I barely see any new roads.
Yeah, where are my 29,000 new roads every year?
Created from whole cloth. And those are just provincial roads. We're not even talking about municipal roads.
That is so true. Chris, you hate the play-in. You hate the NBA play-in.
Yeah, I think it's pretty boring. I don't really... The thing is, I don't really have a fix for it.
Okay.
But I think it's a little silly because, so we're, there are like 15 games left in the season. Think about where we were during the MLB season with 15 games left. That was like the most exciting period.
Yeah, we were checking
the last like year in sports.
Those National League wildcard standings every day. I believed in my Cincinnati Reds, by the way.
Exactly.
Going to be good this year, I feel like.
Yeah, they already had a great piece of news come through with Nolas Marte getting suspended for PED, so they should be really good this year.
Okay. They still have other good players. Ever heard of Ellie De La Cruz?
Ellie De La Snooze, I call him. But, so that was an incredibly exciting time. Conversely, this is like the most boring time because basically, and maybe not quite, there could be a little bit of a something in the Western Conference. But basically, we know who the, and it's crazy to even say this, but who the 20 playoff teams are.
Right. So, that's a question. Do you consider play-in teams playoff teams?
I think it's really annoying that you can't go on a team's basketball reference page and at the top spot where it says how they did in the playoffs, it doesn't include one the play-in. You know?
That is annoying.
That, and you can't just click and see the box score.
Has a team ever... Sorry, go.
Do you have to go to their schedule page? And it's not listed on any stats pages anywhere. It's not listed as a playoff stat because it's technically not a playoff game. It doesn't count anywhere. Even that if you click... Annoying. I literally just clicked... I was looking for... Oh, wait, I'm looking at the wrong year. That's probably the primary issue. But if you go to the play, like, you have to go to a separate page and find the specific thing, like, within the team schedule page. It's a whole thing.
Well.
And I think it's silly.
Basketball reference, you're on notice.
Just call it a playoff game. It's not like teams already play different numbers of playoff games depending on how long the series goes. It's not like adding one game will somehow throw everything off.
It's true, but have you thought about the sanctity of the NBA playoffs as an institution?
I actually don't ever think about that. And the other problem, of course, is that with the wild card in the MLB, that you could very conceivably end up with a team that is going to the NLCS or the World Series or win the World Series. Obviously, the Phillies the last couple of years have been that team.
Weren't the Diamondbacks a wild card team?
So true, Griffin.
The Rangers were a wild card team.
So true, Griffin. But I think mostly on a technicality, like, didn't they have the same record as the Astros, basically?
Something like that. Who can remember?
Well said. But that these teams have a fighting chance of going far in the playoffs, whereas fighting for the 8th seed, Miami Heat accepted. We'll talk about them in the next segment.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you will never expect an 8 seed to do anything in particular. So it's not really that exciting that a team gets into the playoffs as the 8 seed by winning this play-in because it's like, well, what's going to happen once they do that? Probably nothing.
You know what? You've convinced me. Eliminate it. Get rid of it.
They did have the same record, by the way. The Astros and the Rangers were both 90-72, but Houston won on the tiebreaker.
Wow. Another exciting thing that came right down to the wire.
Remember the Blue Jays in the playoffs last year?
Yes. It was annoying. This year, though, I'm feeling good.
This year, personally, I hate to show my bias here. I think it would be great if they won a game.
In the regular season or in the playoffs?
Either one.
You'd be happy.
I will say, because, I mean, by next week, we'll be rolling into the season.
Yeah.
I'm a little trepidatious about these Blue Jays.
Well, Chris, you're the only one, I think, that is not happy maybe with how the offseason went. Did you know, did I tell you that on the day that Shohei Ohtani's plane was in the air to Toronto, I bought tickets both to the home opener and the second home game of the season?
Griffin, on the day Shohei Ohtani's plane was in the air, I also bought Blue Jays tickets on the basis, and now I need to think about, I actually have those tickets still, that on the basis that, like, either he will sign and they will become, it's a speculative asset.
You were gambling. You were gambling on sports.
And hey, Shohei Ohtani was helping me.
Yeah.
He should pay me for, that's a drop in the bucket. But it was as if I bought the famous X-Men number one comic, Griffin, because it was like, if this becomes really valuable, that's great. And if it doesn't become really valuable, I'll still have this X-Men comic to read.
I had the same thought. Well, the home opener, I was like, there are only like single tickets left. Sure, why not? I've never been to a home opener. That seems fun. But then the next day, I was like...
opener.
And then the next game, I was like, they're only $25 right now. If I should grab them now, because they're going to go up once he signs.
Right. I'm seeing that Hans Zimmer is coming to Toronto.
Oh, I saw that as well. I thought you were going to say he died. All right, should we take a break?
Yeah, I have to get these Mega Trainer tickets, so it's probably best.
All right. Can't miss out on the artist of a generation. So we'll take a break. We will be right back to discuss some vibes when we return on High Floor, Low Ceiling.
I can't hear you.
I muted myself instead of stopping the recording.
Leave that in, please.
So now we will take a break and be back in a minute. And we're back. What a lengthy break, Chris, as opposed to last week when we had no break. This week, peek behind the curtain, we took a little bit of a break.
Yeah, we had some real laughs off mic. And it's best that they stay there.
Yes, for your sake. You coordinated lunch. What was your McDonald's order?
I can't get into that right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Frankly, I'm offended that you would bring that into the public eye.
All right, you want to talk? You want to do this? This seg?
Yeah, this is your seg. So, I guess we're going to talk about the NBA, but and the NHL, I guess. I just quickly want to bring up. I feel like the Celtics are like the best team, at least in the regular season, that we've seen in like 5 years, and people just don't care. Like, literally nobody really talks about it. Like,
sorry, I tuned you out. Get it? True. Get it? No, that's not true.
Kind of. like since probably like the 2019 Bucks, and they only won 60 games. But still, like, that kind of period.
I guess people aren't really talking about them in that context, yeah.
Like, people aren't like, whoa, this is, like, when's... I don't even think we've had that many 60-win teams in the last few years. In fact... Oh, the Suns. Two years ago, won 64 games. That was a kind of a stealthy...
Stealthy 60.
Stealthy 64. And then lost in the second round to the Mavericks. Remember that?
Yes.
Good times. But yeah, of course there was COVID as well, but that's the only 60-win team since 2019.
That is kind of crazy. But yeah, I do feel like people definitely know that the Celtics are the best team in the league, although I think you usually couch that by saying, are the Nuggets keeping their powder dry? Are they coasting? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't think that people are quite talking about them in that historical context. So good for you for bringing light to that.
And also just a year where virtually every contender has, like, this flaw to it, because it's like the Bucks, but, like, who knows? OKC, who knows? Denver, they've been there, but also, like, you know, they seem to be coasting a little bit. They're maybe not quite as good as they were last year. Minnesota, who knows? The Clippers, who knows? And then that's kind of all you've got in terms of, like, true blue contenders, I would say. Because after that, you're getting into, like, the Cavs and the Pelicans, which are teams that's like, yeah, they could do something. But again, those are also who knows.
Right.
So in a year where there are so many teams that are like, we don't really know, this team could lose in the first round and it wouldn't be a total shock. it's strange to me that the Celtics, who are very good, who have the best offense and the third best defense in the league, and are almost definitely going to win at least 60 games, probably a little over 60, are just not really being talked about in that way.
Yeah. Do you think people are doubting them as championship favorites, or do you think they just need even more credit?
I think it's partly a doubt thing. I think it's partly like, you know, they haven't gotten over the hump in the last few years. But I do think that they should. I think that they should just be talked about as being clearly head and shoulders, really, because they're now, you know, 7 games clear of the Thunder in the win column. Clearly the best team in the league, and on par with like a Suns 2 years ago, or like you think about the Rockets in 2018, how they won like 65 games, like, and people were just talking them up quite a bit. I feel like they should be presumptive, at the very, very least, finals favorites. But people are like, oh, them in Milwaukee, like, that's a bit of a toss up. And it's like, I see what you're saying, but I do feel like they deserve a little more respect than that.
Yeah. Didn't Milwaukee beat them by like 60 in one game this year or something like that?
Something like that.
So, it looks like you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
That's fair.
No. Chris, this segment that we're going to do today is truly, truly inspired, I think. It's called Friends and Enemies. I didn't give it quite the same flair that you usually give your segment names. No one on earth, I think, can tap into that the same way that you can.
The unholy well.
But yeah, friends and enemies. And what that means is we're going to talk about teams that are most likely going to make both the NBA and the NHL playoffs. But this is a little peek behind the curtain. You know, we present such cold analytical fronts. We talk about analysis. We talk about who we think will do well and who we think won't do well. But I don't want to know what we think today, Chris. I want to know what we feel. I want to know just who we like. Who's a team that maybe even for no real reason, you're just like, you know what? It would be fun to see them do well. Or, on the other hand, who's a team that you're like, hey, I do not want to see them do well. So, friends and enemies. We're going to pick some friends. We're going to pick some enemies. And, like all things in life, why don't we lead it off with one of our friends?
Well, I'd love to keep my friends close.
And do you keep anyone closer than that?
No spoilers! I will start. Most of my friends are, I feel like in the NBA, I mostly harbor resentments and haterism. Whereas in the NHL, there are teams that I just look at and I'm like, that would be really nice if they won. And I think I'll lead it off with a team that I think, you know, Clem McConnell, dear friend of the show, was talking about this team just last week to me, saying, I don't think people are really talking about this team enough as maybe the best team in the whole darn league. The Dallas Stars, Griffin.
Really? That is fascinating. The best team in the Chell.
Obviously, this was around trade deadline time.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, we hadn't seen sort of the new teams break out yet. The Colorado Avalanche had not yet gone on their 7-game win streak. But the Dallas Stars, obviously a terrific forward group. I think an amazing top line. I feel like you could probably find some record of me talking about Rupe Hintz and how underrated he is.
I do feel like those words have escaped your mouth before, maybe even on this very podcast.
I feel like I'm on record about Rupe Hintz. Obviously, Pavelski, hey, talk about a guy that keeps on trucking.
The ageless wonder.
Jason Robertson. And I think they do have really great forward depth. And then on defense, I think that they are quality, basically. They have Heiskanen, who is a pet favorite of Clem's. And then Ottinger and Nett. And I feel like that combination, they have a very dynamic offense and they've shown at times can sort of turn it on defensively in the playoffs. The Tanev pickup was very big for them as well. And I just think that they're a team, and they're very similar to the other team that I have picked, which is in the Eastern Conference, but they're just a team that No one would be upset if they won the cup. Maybe there's a Jamie Benn factor at play. But other than that, I think that would just be a nice story for everyone.
I agree with you, Chris. I'm distracted here. Has Matt Murray been traded? Okay, no, there is a Matthew Murray, who is the backup goalie for the Dallas Stars. I was like, did I miss a Matt Murray trade? It's a different Matt Murray, who is Jake Oettinger's backup. And that, I think, is really the key here to Dallas. Like, Jake Oettinger has been a little shaky this season. If he can lock in for the playoffs, as we've seen him do
He's never been quite as good as he was in that playoff series.
Yeah, but, like, if he can get...
We have Scott Wedgwood as well, who's solid.
Wedgwood is solid, but, like, if Oettinger can be a star goalie and you have, like you said, that great forward combination with a hot goalie in front of them, or behind them, I suppose, I really do see it tough to knock off the Stars. And you and Clem are absolutely right that they are slept on. Plus, yeah. I like Griffin, green teams.
I do like their colors for sure. And Griffin, just ask anyone who's ever tried to close a door. Wedgwood is solid.
Moving on.
I think your video is frozen.
Is it? All right, you know what?
Chris, moving on.
I'll do an enemy.
What's up?
And I will jump over to the hard court for one of my enemies. It's a franchise that historically I have cheered for, but I feel no love for this current iteration of the Phoenix Suns. It's almost like if they were doing really well and they were the third seed in the West, I almost feel like I would be more likely to cheer for them. But because they made this big move to get Bradley Beal in the offseason and they fire Monty Williams and they consolidate into these three pillars, and then they like just flop and Bradley Beal's been hurt all season and they're the seventh seed and gonna probably have to play in the play-in, I'm just like, okay, like I've barely thought of them all year when they should be making a ton of noise, but like they've barely crossed my mind, and I feel like for most basketball fans, they're sort of the forgotten super team. And so the idea that now they would come out and try and make a deep playoff run, I don't want that. You didn't earn that. Like, I want it to be one of the teams that I've been paying attention to all year, like the Thunder or the Timberwolves or something like that. Not these Suns who think that they can just show up in the playoffs and make a deep run. So I'm rooting against the Phoenix Suns.
I think that's very valid. This is something that I talk about quite a bit, Griffin, which is that I think that there's this sort of axiom in the NBA. Sorry, I got distracted by someone on Basketball Reference who really looks like Henry Winkler.
Mike, you ever pay attention to me when I'm talking?
Yes, I was listening to you talk about the Phoenix Suns, and I was about to expand on your point.
Okay.
Which is that I think that there's this axiom in the NBA that people talk about where it's like whenever a super team gets assembled, and a super team has, for example, a Kevin Durant on it or a Bradley Beal on it, a player who you're probably, and I mean, Kevin Durant has been more or less healthy this year, I feel like, but a player that usually you're more expecting in the range of like 55 games from rather than 70, 80 games out of this player. I feel like whenever there's one of those teams that has one of those players or multiple ones of those players, like when you had Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant on the same team, that there's this constant thing of like, well, they'll just sort of manage them, they'll be healthy in the playoffs, and then they'll go on their run. That team is never the team that goes on their run.
No,
I feel like
true.
I can't really think of an example of a team like, you could say the Cavs kind of like coasted some years where they like won 50 games in the regular season or whatever, but you know, they were also scrambling half the time to like totally reassemble their roster.
Yeah.
But those teams are never the team, and either it's because they just did not have time to play together and are not particularly like strongly constructed as a team, or one of their stars is injured. And I think that that's a definite possibility for the Suns. Like, they have multiple people with sort of shaky injury history. Devin Booker has not been super healthy this year, has not, you know, missed some time last year as well. I just think that it's hard to say that, like, they are the, whoa, they could go on a run, they could suddenly explode, and especially they could end up matched up with Denver in the first round, which would not be great for them. And also a team that has, other than that one run, kind of struggled in the playoffs and kind of maybe underperformed a little relative to how good they should be.
Yeah, no, I see exactly what you're saying, and I know, I feel that to be true as well. Whether or not the data bears that out, I frankly don't care. I feel it in my bones, and that's what really matters. All right, Chris, do you want to give us one of your enemies here?
Sure. I mean, anyone who has listened to the show for a while knows that I have no great love for the Miami Heat. No, and I think that it would be really nice if this was just the year that ended. Like, it's just...
Just losing five in the first round and leave us alone?
But that happened, like, 3 years ago, and they didn't go away. They got swept in the first round, and they still didn't go away. I'm just very tired of this narrative. I'm tired of this team. I really like Bam Adebayo. Is my primary, relationship
with the team. That's what's keeping you around?
I really don't like Jimmy Butler. This is well established.
Very well established. Do you know Terry Rozier?
Do I know him?
Have you heard of him? No, I meant to say, do you like Terry Rozier? What's your take on Terry Rozier?
Not particularly, no. I don't have any strong feelings about him, I don't think. I actually do also kind of like Tyler Hero. Which I know is not a super popular take. But it's just annoying because it's like, this is not a championship team.
No.
I feel like people have known that throughout. And like, they've been to the finals twice and... You know, you could say that in the bubble they had a chance. I personally, like, that's a bit of a fake six-game series, in my opinion. And then this past year, you could say that, like, they kind of had a chance, but not really. They were handled pretty handily. And so it's like, this is just not... They're not good enough. They're just not. And so it's annoying for them to sort of, like... crowd in and like take away, because like, I mean, and that sounds a little bit entitled, but it's like, I have no particular love for Boston, for example, but I do think that the season would have been more interesting last year if it had been Boston in the finals, and Boston was now like potentially going to their third straight finals looking to do something there, and that was kind of like what they were going in with, versus like just a kind of underwhelming finals, and obviously that would have been a better series, I think. And so I just want them out of like the picture so that we can focus on at the very least a different team.
Yeah,
if not a most likely a better team, but definitely a different one.
I am with you there. I'm sick and tired of the Miami Heat. Leave us alone, Miami Heat. All right, let's rapid fire a couple of these, Chris. Well, we still got 12 minutes before the hour mark, but we got lots on the list. I am rooting against the Bucks this year. Hashtag justice for Adrian Griffin. Didn't give him the chance he deserved. And listen, beloved Raptors assistant coach.
I don't know if he's that beloved. I did not beloved him as a head coach or as an assistant with the Raptors. I was not supportive of him being hired as the head coach of the Raptors. I was happy for him to get the Bucks job. I was a little bit vindicated that he got fired so quickly, and that is still a strange situation that I would love to sort of get the inside scoop on eventually, whenever that time comes.
I don't know. The Bucks aren't doing it for me this year.
No, they're a frustrating team, I think, is my main sort of issue with them, is that, like, if they were better, sort of like what you were saying with the Suns, if they were better, it would be easier to get behind them. If they were, like, a 60-win team, and it was Giannis and Dame, and they were dominating, and it's, like, sort of like Giannis is going to get Lillard his championship, yeah. I think that would be a more fun story to rally around than it's, like, they're coached by Doc Rivers and are the 2 seed, but also are kind of bad.
I would cheer for them.
It's not a fun vibe.
In a series against Boston, though, I would do that.
That's interesting. I think you know how I feel about good teams being good.
We like it.
At any rate.
Another team that I like, Chris, the New York... We'll combo this, actually. The Rangers and the Knicks are both my friends this playoffs. Down at Madison Square Garden, I'm hoping for lengthy runs. The Rangers, I always think it's cool to see an original six team that isn't Boston or Montreal, like, doing well. They're a fun franchise. I mean, I don't know. So much of this for me is just like when you picture the New York Rangers in the Stanley Cup final, it's like, okay, that would be cool and fun. Like, I know they made it a while back and lost to the Kings, but like it's been a while since a big franchise made it to the finals. And the New York Knicks as well. It's just like, oh, that's a fun change of pace for this historically sort of rundown team. They're not, if they were good every year, then I think a lot of people would hate the Knicks, but they haven't been good enough to be hated. And Jalen Brunson's been absolutely amazing to watch this year. Like, that's been such a fun story. So both the Rangers and the Knicks, I think, like, if I saw them, if they end up making deep playoff runs, I'll be like, yeah, okay, I can get behind this.
Yeah. I more or less agree with you. I've always had a little bit of something about the Knicks where I don't love their roster.
Okay.
But, you know, I guess I like Brunson. I like Josh Hart. I guess it's really Randall. But Knicks fans don't like Randall either. So
that's true. I guess. You're one of them.
I agree with you about the Rangers this year. They have been a fun team to watch. I really like the way that they are constructed. Like, conversely, I really do like their roster, even though they aren't, you know, necessarily the most enjoyable team to watch sometimes. But I think more so than the Knicks, they would be...
on your friend list?
On my friend list, sure.
The terminology is rocketing.
like Facebook.
Yeah. All right, give me one of your friends, Chris.
Another friend, similar to the Dallas Stars. This is like the Eastern Conference equivalent of the Dallas Stars, I feel like. The Carolina Hurricanes. I've talked about them multiple times. I talked about them last year. I was very disappointed that they bowed out so readily to the Panthers.
Yeah.
And they're another team where it's just like they're very good. Obviously, a team that relies more on their defense than their offense, but they do have some very skilled forwards as well. Obviously, the addition of Jake Guentzel has been very big for them. And it just would be nice to see them win one, because I feel like they have been a team that has consistently been good, consistently been grinding, and kind of consistently been disappointing, but not in a frustrating way.
Right.
Not in like a, like, oh, this team, I hate how they keep doing this.
Yeah.
More in a, like, come on. Like, you just want to see them get a good break. And so that's one of my friends.
Okay. I like that. Hurricanes, good one. We like the Storm Surge. They seem like they have a good fan base. I like Sebastian Aho. Okay, I just did a couple friends, so I'll do an enemy. One of my enemies are the Florida Panthers. Maybe this is left over from the playoff series against the Leafs last year, but moreover, I think it's just the Florida Panthers shouldn't be good. They should not be a relevant NHL team. They should just be like the Columbus just Blue Jackets.
Right, just by vibes.
Yeah, just like, why are the Florida Panthers good? Why is that something we have to think about? That's about all there is to it. That's the whole point of the segment. I don't have to back this up. You can't question me.
No, I agree. It is like as if, like, if the Washington Wizards got really good, I'd be like, oh, like,
yeah.
Like, imagine if the Wizards just won like 62 games.
That would be just leave a bad taste in your mouth.
It just wouldn't feel right. And so I agree with you. Even when they won the title, they weren't that good, I feel like.
When did the Panthers win the...
Not the Panthers, the Wizards.
Oh. When did the Wizards win the title?
In the 70s.
Okay. They weren't even the Wizards.
In 1978, Griffin.
Weren't they the Bullets?
I guess they were the Bullets, yes. But yes, they won the title in 7 as a 44-win team against a 47-win team.
We've been paying for it ever since. I did look, man. I feel like people forget about prime John Wall, I will say. He made the Wizards fun to watch. He was really, really good.
Yeah, there was that time period where, and I mean, let's just really just lay back and reminisce at this point.
Yeah,
there was that time period where the whole thing of the Wizards was like, they have a rock solid starting lineup, and it was John Wall, Bradley Beal,
yeah,
Otto Porter Jr., Markieff Morris, and Martin Gortat.
Oh, Gortat!
Fortat was just, he was just rock solid. Yeah.
The Mohawk. I like that lineup.
I do too. And they, and like, it was just like, it was well balanced. They were fun to watch. There weren't any like strong annoying defenders. Guys. I guess Gortat was kind of like, and I just like that sort of class of center, which has sort of been relegated to the bench at this point. But like a Marcin Gortat, a Clint Capela, okay. I think is also kind of in the same boat, where it's like they aren't like a shot blocker, but they are just like very sturdy around the rim, and like a good rebounder, and just good at sort of like dirty work. I just really like that style of player.
Yeah, I may be misremembering, but why in my head is Marcin Gortat only like 6'9"? Like, I feel like he's not even that tall for a center.
No, he was 6'11".
Okay, well, not 7 feet. That's certainly all I'll say not. About that. All right, one more friend here for me as we limp to the finish. Or unless you just want to talk about more about this mid-2010s Washington Wizards teams.
Emphasis on the mid.
Drew Gooden. Remember when they swept the Raptors that one year and Drew Gooden went crazy in like those four games? It was some minor player. I think it was Drew Gooden.
I think you're right. It was Drew. Or Mike Scott.
Oh, Mike Scott. Yes.
Made a ton of threes. Yes, that was in 2015, I believe.
I think, because then 16 they went on the deep run. The Raptors.
And Paul Pierce, of course.
Oh, yeah. The reason I invented this segment, Chris, was to talk about how much I love the New Orleans Pelicans. I'm just a huge Pelicans guy. I love Zion. He's been playing really, really well. I feel like he has not been getting the love that he deserves for how good he has been this year.
You're right.
Like, everyone, I don't even want to talk about Stephen A. Smith and all that, but he deserves. But
you're absolutely right. Like, I think he has been the player that people were like demanding of him, and no one cared. Like,
yeah, no one's giving him credit.
The entire offseason criticizing him for not being like a guy that plays 60 games and maybe doesn't score like 30 points a game, but just scores like low to mid 20s. Like, he's 23-6-5 this season,
right?
And has played in 58 games, and is healthy more or less. Like, he's doing the thing that people wanted from him, and it just hasn't really like translated into like the public consciousness yet. Yeah. I feel like
it's crazy. He's still 23 years old.
That is crazy.
Shooting 58% from the field. I love his field goal percentage every year. Ridiculously efficient. Mm-hmm. Playing like solid defense. Playing a little bit of point Zion, like JJ Redick was calling for. Like you said, five assists per game. I like it. Wasn't even an all-star this year.
Yeah. I mean, like, didn't really deserve it, but
No, but he was an all-star the last 2 years that he played, so this year was not. But, let's give Zion his credit. Let's give Brandon Ingram his credit. Basically just Kevin Durant, but not quite. We love Herb Jones. Who's more fun to watch on defense than Herb Jones?
We love Trey Murphy.
I like Trey Murphy. Yeah, Trey Murphy's fun to watch too.
It's just funny. We are fully lapsing into what naming about this some guy? Guys. Yeah, Jose Alvarado.
So much fun. I would like. Who are they projected to play in the playoffs right now? Is it the Clippers?
Yes, they are the 5 seed, and the Clippers are the 4.
That would be. But a really there, good
it is quite tight between like 4 and 8. There are only 3 wins apart from each other.
That. It's true, yeah. 3.5 games between the number 4 seed Clippers and the number 8 seed Sacramento Kings. So lots of jockeying to be done there, but Clippers-Pelicans would be a really great series.
Much like horse racing, a lot of jockeying to be done.
Oh.
Are we done?
I think so. It's a classic Friday afternoon pod, you know? We're lounging. We did, literally, as you said, are we done? We hit 60 minutes. Is that why you...
No, it's because my food has arrived and I'm ready to eat it.
Eat it on cam. We'll do a mukbang episode.
Not eat it on cam. Thank you all for listening. Please remember to do all the relevant things.
Did you give me my quarter boundary?
7 C House and Jane on Twitter, HFLC podcast on Twitter. Your quarter pounder is right here, Griffin, and I'm going to eat it on cam for you. Until next time, please keep your floors high and your ceilings low.